You're back with the 6th installment of The Gilded Time Traveler. Hey guys, I am really, really excited about this week's episode. So if you don't know, I'm a writer. You can purchase my story, Rosalind, on your Kindle or on Amazon. And it has turned into a book. It was meant to be a 3-part installment that was going to be an anthology. And I just could not quite finish up the second story. I guess it just hit me that Rosalind needed a bit more attention. So I'm going to be reading for you guys basically the first 3 chapters from it. And as more gets done later on, I will add on to it. And I would really love to hear your feedback and what you guys think. And I believe that the next book is going to be what was meant to be the 3rd installment of the stories, which is about a Scottish girl. She may turn into an Irish girl. I haven't decided yet, but it's about family and it's another time period piece, which is what this one is. And if that is the type of books that you enjoy reading, I think that you really will like this. So let's just jump right in. Chapter 1, Rosalind, A Departure Among the Rose Bushes. A flower blooms at the exact time that it is supposed to, never too early and never too late. Rosalind held the new blossoms of pink peonies in her hands while she pondered this in her head. How do they know when it's time? Her reverie was broken as she heard Rose, her beautiful mother, had exclaimed, "Dear, I assume you are all packed and ready to go. You know well and good that the train leaves soon, and it's a little bit of a journey to the depot. So, did you remember to pack enough dresses? You know Aunt Ruby makes quite a lot of appearances during the social season." "Yes, Mother. In fact, I'm afraid I've packed so fully that Father may not be able to fit all my luggage into the buggy," she laughed. Pearl Eltswood was very well respected, as was her father, Vincent. She could be a little overbearing and judgmental at times, but she had always meant well. She only wants what is best for her daughters, Rose thought to herself. She had always had. Her mother had golden hair, always pushed back into some kind of a beautiful bonnet that was matched all the way down to her petticoat. Today was no exception, especially with the departure of her oldest daughter, whom she had so many expectations for. Her eyes were blue, where Rosalind had gotten hers. Her father was dark-haired, with broad shoulders, one you could tell had quite the build in his day, and eyes a color that looked so different all the time that one could never place it. Rosalind knew she had to be an upstanding role model for her younger sister, Charlotte, who was still at the tender age of 11. Both girls were named after their grandmothers and were expected to never bring anything but honor to them. Her father's attentions, although he was always wrapped around his daughter's fingers, was usually on Emmett. They shared a male camaraderie she sometimes envied, but she knew that she had a special bond of her own with her father. Charlotte never seemed to mind. Emmett Jasper Eltswood was her eldest brother, who was 21 now and traveling through Europe, as most men did at that age. Father and Emmett usually talked of sports, hunting, and the possibility of war. Which she understood none, however, did note that Europe had had peace for quite some time, so she did not see a need to worry for him. She loved her brother very much, and he loved her. Ruby Everson had been a longtime friend of her father's family and resided in Big Timber, Montana. Rose was to go stay for a spell, as per request by Mrs. Ruby. She had written Rosalind's mother and made her concerns known about her being introduced properly to society. Never having daughters of her own, she concerned herself with other people's children and businesses she sometimes shouldn't. However, Mother listened to her, as did everyone else, because her opinion was one that mattered immensely in that great state. She was a stern woman, sometimes rude and very wealthy, even by her parents' standards. Of course, Rosalind had been in a few debutante balls, as many of her friends did. Her mother loved showing her off at the age of 16 and 17. They were such beautiful ages. Rosalind yearned to go back and remain an adolescent forever and never have to face a big and frightening world she wasn't ready for. However, learning how to be a lady was all that she had ever known, and still, she understood that all Mrs. Ruby had to offer her, so she complied. "I'm anxious," Rosalind thought. "I must stop it. With the Lord to guide me, I will not be homesick, and I will take in all that Ruby has to show me." Rose's faith was ever so strong, and she was taught by her family. Each of her siblings were brought up in a religious home and with the love of Jesus Christ. God is always to be put first, and this was no exception. Alas, she joined her father in the buggy, after embracing and kissing her mother and baby sister on the cheek, and bid farewell to her beautiful home in Laramie, Wyoming. "I do not know how long Mrs. Ruby wishes for you to visit last, and I do not know when I'll return." Rose thought quietly. This made her eyes misty, for she never wished to leave, not even for a short period. This was what she knew. Home and her garden provided comfort for her. Nevertheless, she always made the best of everything. She got that from her father. Rose looked around at the scene that lay in front of her. Lilacs, the trickling stream nearby, the road stretched out with all the possibilities of tomorrow. She did try to act as if she were brave, but truth be known, it was all pretense. She always longed for adventures, like in her books she stayed wrapped up in. She would get so lost in them, but would always be too afraid. She was just a little too used to being inside of her soft, sweet pink bubble her parents had so lovingly created for her. Rosalind smiled despite herself and her true feelings and straightened out her chartreuse dress. It was a bumpy path, but they had a very pleasing carriage ride for the most part. Her father finally broke the silence, and it was like an answered prayer. He asked, "Why so quiet, my dear Rosalind?" "You know, I'm thinking, Father," she replied. Vincent let out a hearty laugh. "This is true, my bird. You always have been my curious one." Rosalind smiled again. "Are you going to tell me what this is about this time? Could it be all the excitement about being received by Miss Everston for the upcoming season?" "I'll let you know when I know, Pa. I'll let you know." The Great Plains luxury train was as she had imagined upon arrival, glorious and frightening all the same time. Like a ship she had seen being made in Europe, she tried to recall the name and wondered if her brother would choose to travel on it homeward, given his need for fine things, but could not. It was like the story she had read about. A heroine boarding a vessel for adventure, something that she would never be. The vastness of the train's length took her breath away. She felt a twinge of excitement somewhere deep in her stomach. Her father took her luggage and escorted her onto the steam engine. "The Britannic. What's that, daughter?" he asked. Father always used pet names for all of his children, usually referring to them, especially his youngest as Mouse and his son as the Lion. "I was just trying to recall the name of the ships exiting Southampton this month. Do you remember?" "That's right. I had almost forgotten about that, my dear. The Britannic and the Titanic are their names. They should be excellent voyages. I, for one, cannot wait to read about them arriving in New York and for your brother return, so I'll have someone to discuss it with. You know, he had written about them." "No, I did not," Rosalind replied. She was often jealous of her brother's voyages. The carriage had arrived at the train station at 12:45 when the sun was nearly directed overhead. She hugged her paw once more, breathing in his scent, memorizing every detail of him as if she would not see him ever again, and bid him a sad farewell. She wiped a tear for her father from her eye. The whistle blew for last boarders like a horn symbolizing the start of some great journey for those who had boarded with her, and she took her seat. The upholstery was nice as anything at home, she thought. At least that was comforting. If only they smelled like lavender and the maid used to clean to make everything smell so fresh each morning, but it smelled like coffee and pipe tobacco. Passengers all around her were getting comfortable, shuffling around in their cubbies. She took note of the people around her. There was an elderly woman who didn't look very friendly, so she chose to try and avoid eye contact with her. There was a mother with her two children sitting across from her, a boy and a girl. The boy was restless, and the girl was an ever-proper angel. It was clear that the mother was giving her directions on how to behave, as expected in a public setting. Rosalind liked making up names for people that she did not know, like the characters in some novella. She decided to call the little boy Thomas because he looked like a Thomas, and the little girl India, mainly just because she liked the name India. She enjoyed watching them for quite some time. There was an old man with a dog, and a couple that Rosalind had noticed, clearly young and new with love. Newlyweds, she thought they must be. It intrigued her how sweet and romantic. Rosalind had always longed for a love story herself, but feared her complacency would keep her from finding it. She had so many callers, but none of them felt the same as she did, had the same heart inside. She decided then that she was going to occupy her time by making up a story for all of them. They were traveling on their honeymoon to Canada to see the great Niagara Falls. Wrapped in each other's embrace, they sat together so elated to travel together and didn't mind the other passengers' eyes at all. The girl was pretty, blonde, with blue ribbons to match her blue eyes, like a robin's egg. He was tall, with darkest hair, and seemed to only have eyes for her, so she couldn't even get a glimpse of them to see the color, but decided that he must be handsome. Then Rosalind noticed a man sitting in the corner, hat turned down over his face, hands dirty, as though he didn't seem to be asleep, so she couldn't get a good look at him. Still, she decided he was hiding or running from something. He was a cowboy. He wasn't very interesting to her and even made her feel a little nervous. At that time, she decided to try and do something to distract herself, maybe some reading. She was right in the middle of Charlotte Bronte's Villette, which most girls her age were expected to learn in her schooling, and was glad to have even thought to grab it off of her vanity before she said her goodbyes. She had always had a passion for reading. Poetry was her favorite, and love stories with a little sadness, but a happy ending. She always wanted to have her own. Although she had suitors for years now, she never seemed to feel anything towards them but friendship. "I know I want something. I just don't know how to tell if it's love," she would tell her baby sister. It wasn't long before she turned 15 when boys started noticing her. Of course, her mother only allowed the most upstanding of family names to call on her. Somehow, Rosalind never seemed to care about that, a person's social standing, you know. "I feel as if it's what's inside one's heart that should count," she'd tell her father, who was in admiration of his young daughter's wisdom and chuckled at his wife's disdain for her nonchalance towards a proper beau. Rosalind got lost in her book. She always took her studies seriously. She never came upon a book which had words that she stumbled on or places that she hadn't heard of. She even knew a little French because her mother had required her to have a tutor at the age of 12. Just then, the little girl, India, came up to her, stealing her attention, and asked with the utmost politeness, "Madame, would you like to join me for tea?" "Clarissa," her mother exclaimed, "do not bother that young lady." So, her name is Clarissa. I am fonder of India, Rosalind thought. "Please, it's quite all right, ma'am. She's really very sweet, and I don't mind at all." The girl smiled a smile that made her lavender eyes twinkle. She seemed very pleased. "I do apologize. My attentions must have been turned towards my Adam over there." Adam. He does look like an Adam, I suppose, she decided. The little girl had with her a teddy bear, brown, tucked under one arm, one that reminded her of a bear that she once had owned, a bear that slept so many nights beside her. She smiled inwardly at the memory. Also, in the little girl's possession, she had a small white wicker box filled with her dainty tea set. Her small white glove-covered hands set up their dishes before them and put her bear sitting opposite Rosalind and poured imaginary tea, dropped imaginary lumps of sugar into them, and offered imaginary pastries on quite real doilies. Suddenly, she felt the man's eyes upon her and realized that he must have been... Just then, Rosalind noticed that the cowboy was staring at her. He had blue eyes. In fact, he must have been staring for quite some time. "So he decided to show his face, did he?" she caught herself wondering what he looked like. His eyes were blue like the sky, with little flecks of brown in them, like the harsh ground below the train tracks, and his face was unshaven and under ruffled hair. "Well, he clearly doesn't have much use for grooming, that's for sure," she thought, "and who knows what else." Was that the flicker of a smirk she saw? What exactly did he find so amusing? She decided to put her focus back on Clarissa. Something about that man made her uncomfortable. "What is your bear's name?" she asked. "Wendell," she said. "He's my bestest friend. He enjoys the cookies with our tea, but I felt more like pastries today." "Do you need more sugar?"
how grown up she behaved. "Oh, thank you, no, I'm quite all right," she said with a playful smile. Again, the man was staring at her. Why was he being so rude? Doesn't he know that it's impolite to stare? He couldn't be more than in his late 20s, it seemed, but he was old enough to know better, raising or not. Just then he went back under his brown hat. Good, she thought. Rosalind was used to being stared at by boys, but something about this man made her feel nervous. Maybe he was a criminal. Part 2. As Fate Would Have It. She kept playing along. She had her grandmother's china set, a tea set that she had once played with as a young girl in her parents' garden, pretending it was always a Sunday afternoon, and her favorite bonnet her mother would chide her for wearing outside because it could be ruined, although that's what they were meant for. How time passes so quickly, she thought. Once a young girl, now a woman, one who was expected to do so many things that she somehow just hadn't prepared herself for. She was always imagining, daydreaming, seeing the romance and beauty in everything, and often doted upon. Just then, her neighbor's dog ran up into their tea party. "Oh, my heavens, how cute you are," squealed the little girl. "Aren't you just the most adorable little thing in the whole widest universe?" The elderly man just smiled, puffing on his pipe. He seemed to not mind his companion roaming around. "Well, hello, little one. Would you care for some tea as well?" Rosalind asked. It was turning into quite a lovely afternoon. She couldn't help but dread arriving at the Everston estate. Not that it wasn't beautiful, but she always felt so cold there. There was no room for imagination or romanticism. Mrs. Everston wasn't keen on anything of the like. "He's gone," she said. "Who's gone?" asked the little girl as she patted wrinkles out of her lavender dress to match her lavender eyes. Without realizing it, she said it out loud. She went on, "I wonder where he went." Before the long train had made a stop at another depot, the sweet family with her new little friend departed, along with her teddy and her tea set. Rosalind couldn't help but feel a little disappointed. She loved children so. Everything was so bright to them, so new and wonderful. "At least I have you, little friend," the brown, perfectly groomed pup hopped up into her lap. "Mother could see me now," she rolled her eyes. She hates animals and said that they're filthy, loud annoyances, she recalled. "I don't mind you, little one. I suppose now I can give you a name as well?" The pup wagged its tongue in and out of its mouth in agreement, and she proclaimed, "Peppermint." She said it in a whisper, as not to let the man smoking his pipe again hear her. She imagined him getting the dog as a puppy, and him lying beside the lonely man as he sat in his armchair by the fire. Maybe his wife has passed, and he's all alone, she wondered. The thought tugged at her heart. These people, with all their own stories, she thought, all going to write out another chapter in their book, right now on this train, and she was one of them. She wasn't sure how she felt about that. "I think I'll try to go back to my reading. Do you mind?" Pepper sat by her side. He seemed to like his new companion. She read for a while until her eyes began to hurt and then decided, "I think I'll like some real tea. Now I just have to go and find where this tea is held." It wasn't hard to find people congregating around food, chatting about the weather, money, and talks of war. "I don't like these ideas of war," she thought. They really did make her worry for her brother and the future of her way of life should it all become consumed with sorrow and injury. It wasn't a pleasant thought. "I'll have to keep my thoughts focused on something safer, like what she will do when she arrives in Big Timber. I suppose I'll have to unpack my entire wardrobe and make myself presentable for dinner. First thing tomorrow, she was going into town to take in her new surroundings. Surely I can find some reason to venture out. If I say I want to shop, Mrs. Everson will undoubtedly ask to tag along. I suppose I'll have to find another reason. Perhaps I'll mail off a letter at the post about my arrival to Pa and my mother. They'll be glad to hear I arrived safely and how I find my host. I'd better get along to writing first thing then." Her thoughts ran on and on. If only she had someone to talk to. She spotted headlines on the papers being held up by men and the idle chit-chat from the women. It was hard to make out what either of them were saying. The men stared at her in a way that made her turn her head, pretending not to notice, and she made sure not to make eye contact again. The women smiled politely until their smiles turned to frowns out of jealousy once they realized that all the men's attentions were on her. What a pain it is to be 18 and pretty, she thought. She hated the blatant gawking. Of course, Many girls and women alike envied her. Perhaps that was why she felt that way. It did make it difficult at times. Once she added her lumps of real sugar to her real tea, she slowly stirred and sipped and grabbed her saucer to return to the adjoining room. It wasn't very long before she stopped and yelled from fright, realizing that her freshly poured tea had spilled all along her very expensive new dress, and it burned. "I beg your pardon, sir." She was so angry she forgot her manners for a moment and didn't realize the man standing in front of her was the mysterious stranger with the scruffy face from the room that she had been sitting. "Do watch where you're going." "My apologies," he waited. She realized he was waiting for her name. "Well, we certainly are not on a first name basis," given the fact that she already knew that she didn't like the man or know his name, so she glared at him and said sharply, "Miss Elswood." He continued to just stare. "Well, are you going to apologize?" she said. Feeling the gaze of strangers' eyes once more upon her, following her every move, only disconcerted her more. "Of course, ma'am, allow me to help you." "That will not be necessary." "As you wish. I'm only trying to be helpful, ma'am." There was that half smile again, and it drove Rosalind almost mad. "How dare he taunt me," she thought. "Perhaps if you were watching where you were headed rather than avoiding everyone else's eyes and being so rigid, you could have avoided colliding with me, miss." "Your audacity is astounding, sir. I just can't think straight. How embarrassing," she thought. "I'll have you know that I'm anything but rigid. I just don't like people watching me all the time."
"Understandable. I get the feeling you're used to being watched. I don't like that either.
Why is he trying to make small talk with me? Hasn't he guessed that his presence is not wanted here?" she wondered. "I'll pay for you a new dress. That won't be necessary." I suppose that was kind of him. He was sort of handsome when he laughs. "Wait, he's laughing at me now," Rosalind thought. "Ugh, you are most annoying. Did you know that?" He laughed heartily this time, revealing dimples under the dark scruff. "Well, now, that isn't very nice, ma'am."
"Stop calling me ma'am."
"Okay, as you wish. What can I call you then?"
"Rosalind, but not Rose. That is reserved for my friends, and I'm not even sure that I like you."
"Of course not. I don't blame you." He let out a most endearing laugh that she couldn't help but smile a little at. "Why in the world am I smiling?" she thought. "Well, Rosalind, can I offer you a new cup of tea at the very least, and perhaps even dare to ask, may I join you?"
"Well, against my better judgment, I accept, Mr. Warren, but just call me Cortland."
"I'll stick with Mr. Warren, thank you, and if you insist, then you may join me, as long as you can promise not to ruin my tea time, or my shoes, for that matter." He spread that smile across his scruffy face again. "I will be on my utmost best behavior," he said, as he gave a salute. People are staring, she thought. Was it appropriate for him to even be there with her, talking to her like this, and sitting down together? "I suppose there are more than enough people to be considered chaperones on this train," she told herself. "It's not often a lady is with a man alone back home for sure, but this should be acceptable." "What are you thinking so hard on over there?" he broke off her far gaze.
"Just wondering what kind of a name is Cortland."
"It's a family name. My grandfather's, to be exact. It's English."
"I see. And what do you do, Mr. Warren?"
She made sure to address him by his last name and hoped that he noticed.
"I'd rather know what you're traveling for," he said, shrugging off her inquiry.
"Fine. Keep your secrets. I'm heading to Big Timber to stay with a friend for a while. A family friend, to be exact." She couldn't help but wonder why the mystery. Why? Was he on the lam? She started making up her stories again, running from something or someone like an outlaw. She had never met an outlaw before. What crime would he have committed then, though, she thought. All the time, making sure she kept her questions to herself and not out loud. But this worried Rosalind. Still, she couldn't help but enjoy his company, at the least all the time. "I just hope no one is searching for him. If he is running from something, and then it is told he's seen with me, oh, Pa would be so ashamed." Oh, but how the rush made her feel at the same moment. It made her face flush. She prayed that he didn't notice. "What a rebel I'm becoming." She blushed at her own thoughts. Should she even trust this man? "So what makes this friend of yours so worth seeing?" "She is an old friend of Mother and Pa's.
A stuck-up old stubborn one, if you ask me.
but she insists she has things to teach me and feels as if I haven't been properly introduced to society, I suppose. Ah, one of those. You don't sound like you care much about things of that sort, although you look it. She caught herself, not very amused by his statement.
I do. Any respectable young lady knows her place. It would have been rude of me not to accept. Of course it would have, he said condescendingly.
Don't presume to know me, sir.
Well, I wouldn't dare. She knew he was poking fun at her, but she didn't mind. At this point, she realized her anger began to turn into laughter. This surprised her and alarmed her slightly, as it was out of her character. I couldn't help but notice your new friends you had.
Oh, you must mean little India, Clarissa.
What?
He was bewildered. Nothing, she chuckled, and much liked the fact that she was the one with the joke this time. Quite at ease you are with children. I couldn't help but notice, he told her.
I find them kindred spirits, she smiled a real smile. Then she sipped her real tea. Just then her canine friend jumped back into her lap, much to her pleasure.
Hello there, friend. Quite the scoundrel you are, stealing my afternoon tea date from me.
He reached over and tussled the pup's fur on his head.
Just as the old man realized what was happening, he suddenly ordered him to come back. He gave a sideways glance at the Mr. Warren. It seems he didn't trust him. Rosalind was very disappointed, as her puppy friend whined, but obeyed. Mr. Warren didn't seem to notice. She still felt offended. So are you going to tell me anything about yourself, then? He looked right at her.
I'm from the plains, the prairie to be exact, and I'm heading back.
Which ones?
All of them.
This was an odd statement, she thought. Perhaps the old man knew something that she did not when casting his sideways glances at him. But Rosalind had been judged unfairly, too. Judge it for her mind, her wit, and her imagination. Women weren't meant to have any of these qualities. So then, what are you running from?
Who said I was running? He asked.
Maybe I'm just running toward something instead of from it. She was pleased with his answer. Are you old enough to be running on your own? A laugh broke out from Mr. Warren. Are you asking me my age? She smiled and looked down at her cup. Old enough, I promise. She blushed again. What about you, spring chicken? Belle of the ball, I presume.
I'm a woman now. I turned 18 last fall, I'll have you know.
Well, I surmised as much, he replied in his deep, drawn-out voice. People, my family especially, think that I'm not capable of doing anything worthwhile or harder than brushing my hair.
I'm sure they're wrong, Rose.
Rosalind, she pointed out. Rosalind, he corrected himself with another grin. He sure did like to smile a lot. There's plenty to smile about.
Did I say that out loud?
I'm afraid so, he laughed. He was very charming. She was embarrassed.
Does my smiling offend you?
Not in the least, she teased. She began to like his cavalier attitude more and more. Can I offer to fetch you more tea?
Yes, thank you.
As he got up and walked away, Rosalind surveyed her situation. Here she was, with a man she had just met, acting flighty. She chided herself. Remember who you are, she told her mind, careful not to let anything else slip out loud. Part 3. Arrival among the Prairie Sage. He returned with 2 more cups of tea, 1 for himself. She was surprised he even drank the stuff. Men are usually coffee drinkers.
I got myself coffee this time.
Ah, so there it was. So predictable. And how do you drink your coffee, Miss Urim?
Black.
Black, she was right. She smiled despite herself and at her guests.
Don't presume to know me, madame.
He was toying with her again. I must admit, your company has been quite pleasurable.
You sound surprised, he replied.
To be perfectly honest, I wasn't sure if I liked you even being on the same train as me.
Why is that? His tone took a more serious turn.
Almost hurt. Was that hurt in his eyes?
I'm just not accustomed to men like you.
Men like me? He shifted in his seat uncomfortably. I mean no disrespect. His expression changed.
Of course not. Why spoil a perfectly good afternoon with your self-righteousness?
My what? So it's all right for you to insult me, but when I return the act, you're scoffing at me. This man, he was incorrigible. They sat for a while, sipping their beverages and looking out the window at the pristine landscape, trying their best to ignore one another. They did know how to rile each other up. Rosalind noticed smoke in her view. Before she could even begin to think, she saw flames. Flames? Mr. Warren noticed it too. There was no time to speak suddenly, for a stranger came bursting in, shouting that there was fire. Fire, she thought. It can't really be. The train was going too fast. What do we do? She turned around, but he was already gone. All the people started to panic and look about to see what was going on. Smoke started to fill up the train as everyone began to panic and attempting to move into another room. Where did he run off to, hiding at a time like this? What a coward, she muttered through gritted teeth, disappointed. Where has my better judgment gone? I should have known. She knew she had to act now and fast. She had no idea where this courage and conviction was coming from, but she knew that she had to do something. Everyone, calm down. We have to stay calm. I'm sure that the engineer knows what to do. Children and women, come to this section and sit, please, and cover your mouths. Peppermint had gotten up and tried to run away, but the old man decided to sit with the women with him in his arms. She decided that she did not like him very much, but he could do what he wished. At least Pepper was taken care of and safe. All the men come with me. He sat still. She took off searching for the engineer. It was hard to get through the crowd of people in their fine clothes, doing nothing but making matters worse, worrying about themselves as usual. She finally burst into the conductor's quarters. Ma'am, you can't be in here. What's going on? Ma'am, please, return to your seat. He was stern, but also looked nervous. How will we get the train to stop and evacuate all these passengers before the whole train catches on fire? We don't know what is causing the fire as of yet, miss. She could see that he would be of no help. She ran until finally she saw him. Where have you been? What on earth do you think you're doing? The friction from the brake shoe was causing sparks, which led to a fire somewhere on the train. Usually, it just causes forest fires, but it looks like it's right down to the middle. How do you know all this? Show me. Because I'm a fireman by trade, just like my father. I had a friend die in a brush fire. I was on my way to pay my respects to. His wife and children live on the prairie. So that's it. He isn't running from the law. He isn't a coward. He's a hero, and a very modest one. She thought to herself she had him all wrong. Cortland, what are you going to do? She had a look of fear in her sea-blue eyes. Come with me. No one noticed it until it was too late. The fire had spread quickly already. Stopping it isn't going to work if the rod's wheels weren't working properly. We need to get a better look at them. Shock, she thought. How are we going to do that? Look there. The second hopper has a hot wheel. See how orange it is? He pointed out. It's glowing. Yes. And if they haven't stopped, there's a reason, and I'm going to find out what it is. Rosalind wasn't sure why, but she trusted him. Draperies burst into flames. Help, someone, please help me, she heard. What is it? She said as she turned around. My son, he's stuck in the lavatory. The door will not budge. All right, don't panic. Easier said than done, she knew. Rosalind rushed to the door. It can't be, but it really was stuck. She looked around for something, anything to pry it open. She saw the man's pipe sitting there. Quick, grab it. The woman, whose name she did not even know, followed her orders. Rose placed it into a small crack and started prying, praying that it didn't break. Let's hope he doesn't use cheap pipes. Then they heard a sound coming from inside. I hear you, Mommy, the boy said. He sounded around 8, maybe 9 years old. We're getting it open, honey. Don't worry. What's your name? We're going to get you out of here. Declan, the small boy said. She got the door to come slightly open, and the little boy kicked it, feeling that he was helping. Both women pulled at the same time until finally it began to come free right as the pipe had burst into pieces. The door broke open. They had done it. Rosalind couldn't believe it herself.
with an old tobacco pipe. That was a miracle. That should have never worked. She looked up and said a quick prayer, thanking God for helping her. Mother, the small boy grasped his mama's dress as she lifted him into her arms. I can't thank you enough. My hands. Mine too. They looked hurt, but there was a bigger problem by now. The smoke was getting thicker. Inhalation could mean serious injury or death for many of these people looking for somewhere to hide. But there was nowhere. Suddenly, Rosalind realized that they were slowing. Quick, cover your faces with your shawl. Get low. I'm going to find my friend. He's a firefighter and he'll be able to help. She hoped. They did as they were told. Rosalind began to cough. I've got to find him. Cortland! What on earth? Finally, she was free of the smoke and into the air outside, and she saw him trying to unhook one railroad car from the other. He didn't miss a beat. Listen, I need you to get those people over to the other side with the conductor. Once they're all moved, I can try to free this part of the locomotive before the entire thing is engulfed in flames. But why won't it stop? The brakes have got to get free of the heat. Once we're separated from it, they should work properly, I believe. But how do you expect me to get every single person over there? Just do it, Rosalind. We have no time. Be brave, he said. For some reason, this pushed something inside of her. She would do as he commanded. All right, everyone, she said as she entered the back cabin. We have to move one by one quickly to the other car. They looked frightened. Everyone whispered questions of why they weren't stopping, and she didn't have time to explain it to them. Still, the people complied, one by one being handed over, children first, then women in a single file, to the men on the other side as Cortland worked under them. Please don't push, she said, but the people were starting to rush, panicked. The last woman and child were being handed over when suddenly the small girl didn't grab a hold of the passenger's hands well enough, slipping and holding on to the train. Help me, Mommy, she yelled as her mother tried to make it over to her, and the passengers looked on, frozen. Rosalind's anger grew toward the passengers and how little they knew how to help. Cortland grabbed the little girl and pushed her over the rail. She fell, but she was all right. The mother climbed over to hold her frightened daughter. Rosalind was grateful to him. Why weren't the men helping? Rosalind said to Cortland. Was this firefighter the only one with any bravery and care for others? Then the men leaped, making the other car full to capacity. The flames devoured the car they had just been in. Is everyone out? He shouted. I think so, said Rosalind. Okay, I'm going to uncouple us now, but I'm going to need your help. Do you see that draw gear? Yes. Now listen carefully, hold on tight, and get to the side steps with the lever on the bar. Then I'm going to rotate the pin out of position. These wheels seem to be unaffected. And Rosalind did as she was told. The wind was fast at her face, and she could still hear the screeching wheels. My shoe! At least her shoe was the only thing that fell under the train as she held on, barely. No more slipping, she thought. You can manage this. Are you all right, he asked. Yes, I can do this, she shouted. She watched as he maneuvered his strong hands, wondering how he knew so much about so much. Finally, with a screeching whine, the car broke free. Jump, Rosalind, he shouted. He grabbed her and they landed half-assedly onto the other car. Onlookers were still frozen in astonishment, relieved, but not because of them, by the rest of the steam engine in all its fast and fiery glory, bursting into flames into the railway where they had just been. They were not out of the clear. Rosalind and Cortland made their way through the crowd to the conductor. Can we stop her now? I think so, once we're far enough away. He yelled over the noise. It may take a minute. His face was pale, like the ashes that would remain onto the once the inferno dies. Strangers held on to one another like they had known each other a lifetime. The dust kicked up, hot in everyone's hair. Did that really just happen? It seemed more like a dream that happened so fast, Rosalind thought. The sky was gray where the smoke had traveled, still making it hard to breathe. They all had made it. The train had at last stopped. I want to thank you for what you did. If it wasn't for your quick thinking and bravery when all of us had none, I can't say that I know what would have happened, the train conductor said, walking up to Cortland to shake his hand. It really wasn't just me, he motioned toward Rosalind Eltswood, she said, shocked she could even take credit for all that just transpired. We all owe both of you our lives. Many thanks, Rosalind. And with that, he walked away.
Another train was coming to lend aid and get everyone to the nearest depot to find boarding for the night and a crew to clean up the iron and steel disaster. Rosalind's first thoughts weren't of her family and how they would fret upon hearing of the news or how she looked, disheveled and covered in soot, but instead on her brave firefighter, outlaw, cowboy, hero, whatever he may actually be. Oh, how she had judged him so wrong, as did everyone else. Rose. She heard and turned to see his face, that unshaven, glorious face looking at her. Are you all right? Are you hurt? I have to get you on the next train possible to your friend. She will take care of you. Court, she said. His eyes were so big, so bluish brown under that shadow that his hat had cast. How had she not noticed that before? His eyes were so big with fear, worry, concern, and could it be a little something more? What was it? I don't need her, or anyone else for that matter, any longer to take care of me. Except for maybe you. She smiled. His expression changed to one of surprise, relief, and what she could tell was adoration. It was sadness, sadness that was in his eyes before, and she alone had remedied that. Beyond the ugly scene, there shone a bright blue horizon bigger than she had ever seen. Flowers swayed in the wind, dancing a song of triumph and welcome all around her, and she found herself thankful that they didn't get swept away in the flames. Then there it was, a monolithic cloud tiptoed its way above them, spilling out tiny raindrops that soon turned into a flood of awe-inspiring cleansing, a baptism of the both of them. Soon nothing was left after the embers burned out but the people getting on with their lives. Rosalind felt a callous hand slip softly into hers, and she knew that this new journey, this new place, was where she was meant to write her own story. She stood there for the first time, truly a woman, ready to take on the great plans and to see what life had in store for her. Rosalind and Cortland had been holding hands for a while walking, when she suddenly blushed in spite of herself and let go. She had been a tad bit presumptuous in thinking that his feelings had matched hers. How can someone feel this way about someone they had only just met? She found herself not caring what her mother would say. She knew that Cortland had noticed, but acted as though he did not. He didn't want to overstep his boundaries, she knew, despite her obvious change of opinion of him. How to go ahead, she thought. She had to push aside those thoughts, though, because they were now in town. But where, she was not sure. All she knew was that it was bustling, and there were eyes upon them. She glanced around to take in all of the scenery. Magnificent. Suddenly, she felt so many emotions. Relief, joy, trepidation, even appreciation. She felt so inspired and invigorated and enthralled. She knew that this was going to be an adventure, and whether it contained Cortland in it or not, it was doubtful it would be her only one. This was not her destination. "Where in the Sam Hill are we?" she asked. Cortland choked out a laugh of surprise. "Looks like we'd ended up in Green River, not even close to Montana." "Ever been here before?" she asked. "Not here, but places like it. I know a little bit about it." "I thought you'd been everywhere on the Great Plains," she teased. He let the corner of his mouth form the shape of a half smile. "I know it has a river." "Funny," she thought. "It is along the transcontinental airmail route," said Cortland. "Well, what should we do?" she asked. "We," he said. Oh no, perhaps he didn't think that this near-death experience brought to them by fate had any meaning or plans to bond them the way that she did. Then again, he was a member of a fire brigade. Things like that probably happened to him all the time. She suddenly felt her throat tighten. Maybe she had embarrassed herself. "Well, I seem to have found myself alone without a chaperone and far from my destination. And to be honest, not very sure I still want to travel there." "I guess I had hoped." Her voice trailed off. Cortland grabbed her hand, lifted it to his lips, gave it a little squeeze, and laid the tiniest of kisses on her three middle fingers, so light she wondered if she had dreamt it. This all certainly felt like a dream.
So far off, not real, but completely sublime. A figment of her imagination, it seemed. But she looked into his eyes that told her that it was real. So she decided not to press the issue any further. For his ethereal presence may disappear altogether if she doubts it any longer. I feel it's my duty to get you safely to your family. If not to your aunt, then at least back to your family. The first thing you should do is write to them.
Oh!
He's right, she thought. But she also hoped to change his mind. She had to change his mind.
Sir, are you all right? And you, madame, can I offer you any assistance?
A man said in a hurried tone. And just then a swarm of people surrounded them, talking to each other, one of the passengers, ensuring that they were all right.
Well,
I don't have any luggage, but if you could point me to the nearest hotel, that would be wonderful. Everyone scattered about, doing the same things as her, wondering what to do next, but grateful to be there. There is a cozy inn there, on the east side of town. There you will find someone to assist you.
Merci beaucoup, she offered the stranger.
He smiled and went to offer his assistance to someone else.
Cozy, hmm?
Court, she said. You don't think he thought that we were married? She blushed that pink peony blush upon her cheeks again. She could feel the blood rushing to her face, mainly because of her realization, but partly because she didn't hate the idea.
Well, let's go there. See if we can get you set up.
They walked until they found the hotel, breathing in the country air. It was sweet that day, mixed with a little dust. The Dragonfly Inn, the sign read in lovely whitewashed letters. The town was quaint, but growing. She was used to the city. She liked the idea of being on her own with a handsome cowboy in a place where the prairie grass danced golden along the wind, and for the first time in her adult life, or possibly her whole life, she felt free. Twilight was upon the horizon and the air grew brisk. She shivered.
Here,
you don't have anything to keep you warm. It's chilly at night out here. Take my coat. I guess I didn't leave all my shawls behind. It felt good upon her shoulders.
Mr. and Mrs., how may I help you?
The man at the front desk asked.
Oh, the coat, she realized. She liked the idea, but hearing it out loud from someone else made her cheeks grow warm again.
The peonies.
We'll actually be needing two rooms, Cortland had broke in.
Okay, right this way. Much obliged to you, Cortland told the stranger.
Oh, thank goodness, she thought. It's one thing to have people think we're married, but to act as if we are.
She let her thoughts trail off. It was so exotic, so foreign. She decided to add it to her book in her head, her story she was constantly writing, except it wasn't her imagination anymore. This leap into the world was real, and she was going to find out everything she could before she let him return her to her family. If he did it all. Once inside her room, Cortland helped get her settled before settling into his own. I'm going to be just in that room across the hall on the other side of the staircase. You know, it still bothers me what happened back there. What caused it?
You don't think it was a coincidence? Rosalind had asked him.
I don't know, but I'd be lying if I said I didn't want to find out, he told her. Well, to be honest, I'm too tired now to even think of such things, she said. Would you hate me terribly if I got some rest?
Of course not. Sleep. Sounds good to me, too. We'll meet downstairs for breakfast.
And with that, he exited the room. Then across the hall on the other side of the staircase. And with that, he exited the room to head to his own. She hated watching him leave. It's not like he's going to leave you here, Rose, she chided herself in her mind. Oh, my letter home, she remembered. She had almost forgotten in the haze of confusion. Feelings, danger, or illusion, whatever it was. She ran back downstairs.
Excuse me, sir, but do you perhaps have some stationery I may write home with?
Yes. I can directly have it mailed for you, he returned. Thank goodness, she thought. But she paused, wondering to herself what to write. She found herself unsure of what to say. If she didn't tell the truth, they'd hear of it soon anyway, be devastated. Aunt, I must write her too. No doubt whomever she sent to fetch me found out what had happened.
It must be a wreck, too. She licked the pen and wrote, Dear Mother and Father, by now I'm sure you have heard about what happened aboard our train. I assure you that I'm fine, although what transpired was most regrettable. I find myself without luggage, but have the money that you sent in my pocketbook to take care of me upon my arrival to Auntie's. Please do not worry, for I am fine. She pondered whether or not to add about her traveling companion, but decided against it. No doubt Auntie and her mother and father would all be in contact, even if she decided not to add where she was, in case they decided to come find her. She was a grown woman now, and could take care of herself, certainly. She thought longer about what she had written after that. Auntie, I am so sorry for worrying you. I am detoured, but I am safe. I do have provisions Mother and Father sent with me, luckily. I am, however, enjoying seeing the Great Plains, and I am thinking of a short stay, if you will. We'll write shortly. All my love, your niece, Rosalind. And upon deciding it was too tiring to ask for water to be heated for a bath, she could not wait any longer to close her eyes. Her belly was all in knots and too elated to eat. Was she happy? Sad? How exciting was it all? And thankfully, no one was badly hurt. One more thought crept into her mind as she fell into a fitful sleep. Those blue eyes under blonde hair staring deeply into her, seeing past all her childlike aura, past her insecurities, and saving her again and again. Rosalind awoke with a horrid dryness in her mouth. She peered around the room at her surroundings and momentarily forgot her whereabouts. The first thought that crept into her mind was the train accident. The fire, the smoke she had inhaled, her parents fearing for her, and she felt a tightness in her chest. Then the next thought that came over her was joy when she remembered the shaggy-haired hero she had made the acquaintance of on her trip, and her heart lightened. It was definitely a heady concoction, the two emotions. I have to get up and get my wits about me, she thought. She looked into the looking glass, but barely recognized herself. She didn't know if she should make herself presentable first, then go and find him. My bag, she remembered. She took some water and smoothed her chair into a dusty rose-colored bun, with a single ringlet still intact dangling down her cheek. She washed the soot off her hands and face as best that she could. Her dress was torn, almost in rags. What a sight she must have been last night when checking in. No doubt the man at the front desk had heard about what had happened, because otherwise, a woman in her condition, walking in with a man, would have gotten into some trouble. This will have to do, she decided. Rosalind darted down the staircase, forgetting to even knock on his door, and took a look around. He was nowhere. All she saw was the desk clerk, some fine furniture, and the other guests now gawking at her and her appearance. Her heart sank. Surely he didn't leave her. Excuse me, sir. I mean, begging your pardon, but have you seen? Suddenly, her eyes drifted upwards towards the sight, and it was a sight for sore eyes. It was Cortland, now changed and his hair combed back, though he still could do for a shave. She felt the tension leave her, and he smiled. You didn't think I left you behind now, did you? He asked. Well, no, but yes, a little. A smile curved on his face. What are you holding? He was carrying a dress about her size, not as extravagant as she was inclined to, but clean, clearly new, and clearly meant for her. I really hope you don't mind. I took it upon myself while you were recuperating to go and find us some new garments. I know it's not anything fancy, but seeing how you've lost your luggage. It's wonderful, she said, and she meant it. Why don't I let you get dressed, and I thought we'd find us some breakfast. At the mention of food, her stomach rumbled. That sounds like a good idea. I'll be back as soon as I can. She took the dress gratefully and composed herself to hide her giddiness. Upon returning to her room, she quickly got dressed, and although it wasn't a perfect fit, she wasn't one to complain. The skirt came apart from the blouse and was blue with buttons down the middle for decoration. While the top had no lace, it was still becoming on her. It would have to do for now. She was grateful that he let her leave in something other than what she had slept in. She left again and saw him standing there waiting at the end of the staircase. He wasn't smiling like she thought that he would be when he saw her. Maybe he had more on his mind. She found herself disappointed. Cortland wanted to hide the thoughts swirling around in his mind, especially because she looked so fine in her plain dress, walking down toward him like a dream. But his face betrayed him. The last couple of days had not been what he had expected,
He had actually boarded the train to study them and how they had been causing fires themselves. During the Great Fire 2 years prior, him and his best buddy from the New York Fire Academy fought bravely against the fires caused by locomotives, cinders and sparks flung into the wilderness and among lightning and backfiring crews, causing thousands of fires throughout Montana, Idaho, and Washington. New York had not been his favorite place to be. It was too busy. But his roommate, Lawrence, had become his loyal friend and eventually was more like a brother. He was like him. No real fancy upbringing, just meager means, but a mother who also was widowed and would sell off anything that she had to work her fingers to the bone to ensure that her son would be able to have an education and a noble profession. When his mother Florence had passed, he left behind any ideas of ever returning home. It wasn't like women then to have only one son. He did have a sister, Isla, who had long since been married and moved off with her children. He never had plans of going back. His mother never got to see her son graduate, and he didn't see much point in it. He did have wonderful memories of her and their home, of him and his sister, of growing up on a farmstead, getting dirt under his fingernails, his sister playing with dolls that were made out of corn cobs until his mother could afford to get her a real one. Which is another reason he knew not to get his hopes up about Miss Rosalind. She was above his station, even though he had risen above his own. He opened the door for Rosalind and held it open so that she may walk outside. "I found the name of a little cafe from some people today, unless you want to eat at a saloon," he told her. Her expression was first of surprise and then wide-eyed. It softened and said, "I'm sure the cafe will do perfectly." They made their way, and as she walked, he watched her. How she carried herself. She was a force of nature, he thought. Not only did she stand toe-to-toe with a raging fire, but she carries herself like a queen, drawing awe in her direction everywhere that she went. She's modest, humble, and kind. It's as if she did not know what a magnificent creature she was. She certainly had impressed him. Something gave him the feeling that there was much more to her than meets the eye. She's not as dainty as she appears. For a quick moment, he wondered if she could hold her own as a farmer's wife, a fireman's wife, or just a wife. He quickly stopped himself. People walked among the streets with their shopping and gossiping, walking pets and babies. They came to a quaint building that read the Merriweather Cafe. "I suppose this is it," she said, looking rather famished. So he didn't make her wait to go in. There were doilies on the tables, candles and china mixed with flower arrangements, and dusty old pots and pans on the wall. He pulled a chair out for her. "Thank you," she said, and he felt a knot in his stomach. "This is a nice place," she said.
"Is it?"
He felt as though she was just being polite, because he was sure that she'd been to finer places than this, but it was the best that he could do. The waiter, a young girl who couldn't have been any older than 17, said, "What can I get you?" Without even glancing up, she put her writing utensil to her temple and made an odd expression with her lips. She wasn't bad looking either, with dark tendrils that enveloped a too-tanned face, the kind of face you can tell had been working out of necessity. Her green eyes peered up at him for the first time. Then she looked over at his companion. She was all too eager, he realized, to take his order and only grimaced at Rosalind. "I guess I'll take a hamburger steak with green beans and biscuits." "How do you like yours cooked?" She leaned in closer.
"Medium will do just fine." He began to blush.
"Excuse me," Rosalind interjected. "I'll have the same." Quillen was resigned to only look at Rosalind, trying his best to act as if he hadn't noticed the girl's clear admiration. The girl began to walk away. "Ahem," Rosalind asked. "Don't you want to know how I'd like mine?" The waitress didn't want to pry her eyes off of Cortland, but did so finally. She didn't say a word, but glared at Rosalind, awaiting her response. "I would like mine well done, new potatoes on the side, and a French onion soup while we wait. 2 spoons, she said with extra emphasis on the number. Cortland felt blood rush to his cheeks, but chuckled in spite of himself. He knew what she was doing and was pleased at the fact, but surprised all the same. While they waited, he glanced around the room. It was customary for him to notice all of his surroundings, every possible exit, every unsavory character, every
possibility upon entering the room. He knew it had come with his firefighter training. All he managed to see, though, were some families who looked like they had just left a church sermon, a very clumsy and overwhelmed waitress that Caroline clearly was giving a hard time, and two doorways, one that had entered through with wide, oaky double doors they had seen, and another leading into the kitchen, which he was sure had another exit. There was a man with a gun on his hip he had noticed, which wasn't all too menacing since there was no weapons in town long. Law that it had been outdated. He most likely had it for protection. But he kept an eye on him anyways, stealing a glance every few minutes or so when he realized that Rosalind had been talking to him for quite some time. But all he heard was murmuring, like a buzzing or humming in the background that was coming from a blurry figure. He snapped back into the present immediately and felt sorry for it. "Am I boring you?" she asked him. "No, you were saying about..." "Oh. Would you prefer Caroline to come back and take your order again, then?" she teased. Smiling behind her glass of water, he blushed. Then he cursed himself in his head for realizing that he was blushing. "Grown men don't blush." "I'm sure I haven't the faintest idea of what you're referring to," he teased back. Just then the soup appeared in front of them, two bowls and two spoons. "On the house," the young girl said to him, referring to the clear attempt to keep them from sharing the same bowl. "Really?" Rosalind said at him. "You were saying..." She had a way of making him laugh like he'd known her for a lifetime, of putting him at ease in a way he hadn't felt since his sister and mother were around. He couldn't help but long for her sweet laugh to stay in his life, but he knew that eventually she'd go back to where she came from. He suddenly felt sick. "Aren't you hungry? We missed breakfast. I was sure that you'd be ravenous by now. I thought all men ate like pigs," she said to him with concern. "I'm not so much just now, but we do need our energy." He moved his spoon around his bread, cheese, and the soup, as if to give the illusion that he'd eaten more. "So what's on the agenda again today?" she asked him. "Shopping, I presume," he said while tipping the brim of his hat higher. "I suppose I am in need of a few dresses, and I didn't see you with another garment either," she said while looking out the window. "Well, I don't need much, as long as I have my hat," he said. She glanced at him with a simper. Oh, that smile, he thought. There is nothing like that at home, that's for sure. The remainder of their food arrived, and Rosalind was afraid that she wouldn't look very ladylike, but she could hear her stomach growl as the girl placed it in front of her. So she grabbed her fork and knife and ate hungrily in a way she had never done before. Certainly not in front of anyone else, and only if her mother could see her now, she'd be astounded. Rosalind glanced at Cortland to see if he was embarrassed, only to find that he didn't seem to notice, let alone care. She slowed down. She placed a careful bite of steak in her mouth and tried to eat with a lot more patience. It felt good to not have to worry, though, constantly about how she looked or how she was acting, using her manners at all times. He seemed to not care at all, in fact. She felt a bit more at ease. "I've never been shopping with anyone other than my mother and sister," she had said. "Well, I'm not much of a shopper at all." He seemed to have more of his appetite now. "Good," she thought. "You're going to get a lesson in it today, then," she told him with a smile. The remainder of their meal was spent in laughter, and each time she would steal a glance at him and he caught her, she looked away. And each time his smoky eyes would land upon her, she would pretend not to notice, but just giving him enough time to get his fill, and long enough to make her feel warm in the chest. The sky was a steely gray color out now as they exited and began walking through all of the people. Clouds hung in the air like cotton waiting to be touched. Rosalind let out a smile and Quirk caught her. "Let's go in there," he said. "Oh, can we?" There was a sign outside, as well as figures in the window wearing a chiffon blouse and a matching skirt. She really wanted to get some sensible outfits and didn't want to spend all the money she had, so she stepped into and gently fondled the hats in the display window. Court watched her from under his hat with amusement. "Do you mind if I try this on?" "Are you sure that's what you want?" he asked her. "Why?" "I need clothes, but nothing too fancy. Don't you like it? Here, I'll try it on." When she stepped out in a plain pink dress with lace just around the sleeves before the elbow, she thought she saw amazement in his eyes, not amusement. He must like it, she thought to herself, pleased. The next door, she found a pleated skirt and a hat with flowers on it. Court seemed to even find himself something. Men don't seem to need much, she thought. At the last place they entered, she said she was almost done, except, oh, she exclaimed. Court whirled around so fast that his hat fell off. What's the matter? He almost yelled. But she was stunned a little and just looked at him. I forgot I needed a nightgown until I saw one. I thought you were in danger. They both laughed a little, like, so easily. They did that with one another, and she went to pay for her items. Rose, I am sorry. I was so on edge back there. It's just that those two fellows have been following us since the last store, and they've been looking at ladies' clothes, well, for a while. Shouldn't mean any harm, she said. Maybe they're shopping for their wives. You're right. I'm sure that's all it is. Just a part of my nature, to expect the worst out of everyone. Well, that's a sad thought, she said, only to herself. She wondered what all she did not know about him. What made him such an enigma? And that's the end of Rosalind. I hope that you guys will forgive my children playing in the background who went nap in their rooms, and some fumbling on my part because it's a lot of words, and one day I hope to get better at that so that I can do some audible readings. It's kind of a goal of mine. So if you would like to keep up with Rosalind and what happens next, then pay attention to my podcast, and later on I will be adding on things that I am about to tack on and write and tackle the next chapter, which should be chapter 4. So thanks you guys for listening, and I hope that you have an awesome week.